Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00009. Recorded on December 30, 2022. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Part 2. Keep on trucking. Part 2. Chapter 9.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
Logistics engineer. I was, you know, I'm still kind of in transportation in my weird sort of way. I mean, that's the industry that I do my art in. Because I'm the fucking Dwayne Schneider in Post Harlan, Texas, right? I don't do any actual logistics or transportation work, but I'm in the industry, right? But I used to be a logistics engineer. And I moved, you know, and I was in that field in other roles too, a business analyst and things like that. I ended up driving a truck. I just ended up dropping everything. I dropped out of the whole corporate office scene completely, and I just said, fuck it, you know. And I started driving a truck. A truck, and I always thought it was cool. I always just had a fascination with the idea. I've always had, like the Leonard Skinner called, the old traveling bone, you know. I've had that in me. I was always a runaway from home, right? I was always running away from home when I was a kid, teenager. I was always looking to try. When we took off, like for family vacations, and we did it, you know, driving, which we usually did, I was up front. I love being on the road. I love road. I still do. I'm a homebody. Otherwise, it's kind of ironic, you know? I want to be home more than anywhere in the world. But if I'm not home, I want to be everywhere else. Not just somewhere else. I want to be everywhere else. I always want to be on the fucking way somewhere. But never really anywhere. It's hard to explain. But I like that. I like to see things. I like to experience things. And it's the way I am. So it's like, you know, I finally just checked in with that whole sense. And it's like, I'm going to go get me a fucking CDL. And I'm going to drive a truck. Fuck this office shit. I'm breaking out. And I'm going to figure out a whole completely different life. Myself, right? And so I did. I quit the job. I cashed in all my like 401k, and I sold off all the stock, and I sold my fucking house. I sold off most of my possessions. I drove off with whatever I could fit in a pickup truck. That was it. I literally just minimalized my existence down to that and a fat bank account, you know, and a carton of cigarettes and fucking gas station burrito, and just drove off, you know. Drove off, and I ended up out in the country in the middle of Georgia. And I, you know, I had already been in the pursuit of starting a life as a trucker, looking into the education, looking into trucking companies, all the shit that I would need. I bought this laptop I have right here in my home studio. That's why I got this fascinating room reverb going on. I can't stop it. I record it here. I sound different than I do otherwise. And I'm I'm sorry if that's an aggravation to some of you. Sometimes it bothers me, right, to have a little excessive reverb. But this is real. This is not processed in. I just got room reverb because I'm in a room, right? But in this room, I got this laptop, and I got this laptop because this was going to go on the road with me while I was a trucker, and it was going to be my contact to civilization, basically, you know, while I was moving around. I had bought an air card for it when air cards were brand new. Like, I was getting it for like $30 a month. They ended up being like $80 shortly thereafter. But I had a direct connection, you know, from like the satellites down into my laptop. I had internet everywhere all the fucking time, which was brand new at that time. We're going back now to the year 2006, 2007, right? 06 is when I bought this thing. It still works. I got fucking Windows XP on it. It still works. Go figure. I can't do shit with it, but it works. So I got that for trucking. I bought like this big book about things about trucking and just shit like that. I just started putting it all together, a little bit here, a little bit there. But I was going the course, and eventually I was out east of Atlanta, about an hour and a half, living out there in the country with some step relatives, right, that I kind of inherited from my an uncle of mine who passed. And you know, I found the nearest truck driving school to go get the CDL. It was over in Conyers, Georgia, right? It was called the, what was it called? Georgia Truck Driving Academy, right? The Georgia Truck Driving Academy. So I went there, I don't know how long it was, a month or two. It wasn't really all that long, but it was like every day, you know, every day you got up, it was like you commuted and commuted back. You got where you were going, and you know, you went through this whole day of classroom stuff. You, written tests you had to pass, and a lot of people coming in from trucking companies giving you overviews of their company and, you know, trying to recruit you and things like that. And then you had like trucks out on the lot, and you had to drive around and do these different maneuvers and pass the driving tests. And we would drive out locally on the road every here and there, you know, under permit with an instructor. We'd actually go into Atlanta, drive in the city, you know. Ultimately, you do a driving test with an actual state employee, and yeah, you pass or fail, and then you move on. I got my CDL, and then I started looking at the different trucking companies, and I started trucking, basically. And it started there at a truck driving academy, and there were some fun fucking memories. I mean, stupid shit. And one of the guys was a chicken man, right? They called him some chicken something or another, whatever his name was. He was like the chicken guy. When I say chicken guy, you understand about Georgia, North Georgia and the Central Georgia. It's like the chicken capital of the entire fucking world. I mean, they got chicken coops that hold like a million chickens in them, right? There's chickens everywhere, right? The processing plants are up there. In fact, where I live, where I had my house, the house that I sold to leave the corporate life and go out on a road, the next exit up, it was Interstate 575, you know, coming out of Atlanta and heading north. Next exit up from me, they had a chicken processing plant. It was called Pilgrim's Pride, if I remember right, right? And this is fucked up because, like, I moved up there. And when I bought the place, you know, two fucked up things happened. I did a test drive on the commute, and it was in the summertime. And it was 27 minutes to get to work, right? But the reality was, once school started, you had a 2.5 hour commute. That it blew. It just it was fucking terrible. I didn't know. That sucked. I didn't know about that because I wasn't around for that when I was making the decision to buy the house. And the other thing I wasn't around for was every time I went to look at the house and do business with the real estate people, the developers, and all that. I was there in the daytime, you know, go figure, right? Office hours and shit. At night, that next exit up at that chicken processing plant, like around 11 o'clock every night, they did something. I don't know if they like took all their carcasses and all the shit and they just like lit it on fire, but there was this fucking stench. And I used to call it Chicken Shit Valley, right? This smell would just come down the highway and it would just sit on the neighborhood. And it would like nose hairs would just fall right the fuck out of your face, right? stunk so bad. It was pungent, and you couldn't even really tell. Now, the smell of chicken shit is pungent. It's got like that mustard gas element to it on its own. But of course, burning flesh, burning feathers, you know, that burning thing has a scent of its own too that's very disturbing. And it was like a combination of all these factors. I mean, it made your eyes fucking water, made your clothes stink. You know, I have clothes, a business casual for the corporate office, hanging in my closets or whatever. And it, like, that smell would get into them night after night. And I'd go into the office, like, every once in a while I'd smell that on my shirt. Like, Jesus, this sucks. This is horrible. The chicken shit valley, right? But the chicken man instructor, I mean, he ran one of those million chicken coops. It was an egg operation, and they would, you know, chunk them off, sell them off for meat. And they would have all this shit, right? Literal chicken shit turd that they would have to do something with, right? So they would sell it as fertilizer. So now you've got, like, in North Georgia and down into, like, Middle Georgia, you've got all these farmers that would buy up all this chicken shit. Or just take it for free. I don't know really what the economy of it all was. But they would use it for fertilizer on all these fields. And so you would just drive around. And every once in a while, you just, there, here comes that fucking pungent smell again. Jeez, my eyes are burning, the nose hairs are falling out. You know, around every bend, there was another field that was just covered in chicken shit. In fact, I lived, I had a girlfriend out there at the time. She was renting a house way out in the country. And there was a huge field across the street. Must have been, shit, 75 acres or more, covered in chicken shit. Oh, we'd go outside to smoke a cigarette. It just, oh, man. Couldn't smoke in the house because they had, like, kids and shit, right? And it just, you would get used to it, I suppose, as time went by. And it just made me, like, I'd commute, right? Going back to, like, the truck driver school of Conyers. I would go through all that. I would start the morning out, you know, if I'd stay over with the woman. I'd walk outside, and the first thing I smell was chicken shit. I get in the truck, and I start driving. And like I said, around every bend, there's another field with chicken shit. Chicken shit. Chicken shit. And I'd get, you know, where I was going. I'd get to the school, get out. I'd always be early. I'm the kind of guy, just so you know. I'm usually a little bit early for everything that I plan to do. Conscientious like that. So I get to school a little bit early, and who's ever there early, you know, we're just hanging around shooting the shit. And I'm complaining. You gotta remember, I'm a damn Yankee. I'm not used to the South. I'm not used to country stuff. And any experience I had with those things never involved, like, high volumes of chicken shit. You know? I just didn't know this stuff. It wasn't me. It wasn't in my background. It wasn't in my composition at the time. Of course, I know now. So I'm sitting there, I'll be complaining to this dude, you know? I remember, there was one guy, he would show up, and he'd go hunting in the fucking morning, right? He'd go out and feel hunting for whatever. He'd show up here, there, he'd camouflage on his face. Camouflage pants, camouflage shirt, camouflage hat. You know, he was, what, early, mid-30s maybe. Absolute redneck. Good-looking dude, actually articulate. I don't mean to say that he was hokey or but he lived out in the country, he lived out in the hills, and he spent his time out in the woods. And apparently his family, that he just comes from that. And I'm complaining about all this chicken shit everywhere, the smell and how aggravating it is. And I'm just being basically a Yankee bitch, right? And he just looked at me, and he just rubs his hands together. He goes, that's the smell of money, right? That's the smell of money. And he like had a beard, and he looked like, he looked like a big version of Barry Gibb from the Bee Gees, right? In the 70s, he had that great hair. When he took his camouflage hat off, he had a camouflage trucker cap. He'd take that off. He had that great hair like Barry Gibb, and he had that beard like Barry Gibb, kind of middle, like short crop. And he looked like him. He had the same facial features, but he was like 5'10". Barry Gibb's like this little dude, right? And he looked like he's like the redneck BG. That's what I used to think of him as. Did I call him that to his face? No. If I did, would he know what I was talking about? Probably not. But yeah, my redneck BG dude who regards chicken shit as the smell of money, right? The smell of money. And another story from that truck driving school, and this one is just kind of weird. I don't even, is it even a story, or it was just an observation that I made that I wasn't really ready for, you know? So what I found, I moved down to South, I got into the Atlanta area, and it just seemed to me, in my travels, in my interactions, that area, that South, was a whole lot less racially oriented than like the mass media would have you think of it, as your history books in school would have you think of it. The general reputation, like, of the South being like this whole racist place, it was not as racist as New Jersey, where I came from. It wasn't. It just was not. And it was kind of like a surprise to me to see how it was, you know? There was just a whole lot less tension in that regard. So I kind of got used to that the time I was there, you know? And I got caught off guard this one day by some other guy, young guy, early 20s, innocent, like just as far from being worldly as an American kid could possibly be. He grew up out in the country somewhere around there and had never been anywhere else, you know. Nice, most polite person you'd ever meet. Well, at that truck driving school, it was all about getting your commercial driver's license, your CDL. There's different grades of CDL. There's one for driving the 18-wheeler around, the tractor-trailer. There's also one for, you know, driving buses, right? You drive buses, you have people on there, and they got different concerns, and they operate differently. So that school did classes for both, right? Buses and trucks, trucks and buses. And I don't know, one day we all went out to lunch somewhere, and I got some of my first barbecue, my first Southern barbecue, it turned out. It was some just backwoods country place. It was really good. That's where it all starts for me. We come back, and when we got back, they had this old bus, and I don't know how old, 50s, 60s, maybe early 70s. I'm thinking 60s. Just parked right out in front, you know, where we all do our thing. We get out of our cars, and we go to our class, we hang out. That's where we smoke and shit. But the bus was just parked right there. So we're all just kind of like hanging around looking at this bus. And we get back from lunch. A couple guys decide, well, let's go up inside and check it out. Right? So I go up there. I just follow them in just stupidly because what else, you know? We're just kind of twiddling our thumbs waiting for the next class to start up. I'm on the bus and I got this guy I'm talking about. This young guy, real polite, backwoods, Georgia boy. And he just goes quiet and he just starts looking around. He starts sniffing, you know, like, you're like, damn. And I go, what? He said, it smells like colors. And I was just like, what? What the fuck did you just say? Right? And he goes, yeah, it smells like colors. Now, and I don't even know what my response to that is. It just caught me so off guard in so many ways. And again, this guy was so innocent, and he spoke so innocently. He used this word that I hadn't heard anybody use since I was like a little kid, right? Like my grandparents' generation used that word. I just hadn't heard it in so long. And on that level, it just caught me off guard. And just the fact that, like, what, like a race of people have a certain smell that other people don't? That was fucked up to me too, you know? That was fucked up to me also. And it just can't be. That's ridiculous. But then I heard years later, I was some stand-up comedian, right? When I'm here at home with my wife and you know, we're just eating dinner or something like that, I'll just find something to occupy the air. And every once in a while, I'll just throw on some random stand-up comedy, something you could just listen to for like 15, 20 minutes and just move away from, right? And I don't know. I think it was Bill Burr. I don't know for sure. I'm not an expert on these matters, but I think it was him. And he was talking about something like, he had a black girlfriend who explained to him that black people think white people always smell like wet dogs. Something like that. And I was like, I never heard that before either. So it made me think, and it makes me wonder. It's like maybe people, not necessarily by race, of course, that's bullshit, that's ridiculous, but by culture, something cultural makes people smell differently. It's like if you were just Italian, like straight up Italian, both sides, right? Your mom is in the kitchen all the time, cooking Italian food, always cutting up the garlic, you know, always with the tomato sauce on everything. You know, maybe with the Parmesan cheese, because you know Parmesan cheese. You go into like an Italian deli up in Jersey or wherever they may be. I love those places. But they got a certain smell to them, right? I had them like in my neighborhoods growing up and shit. But the Parmesan is like the real strong one. If you're in that all the time, that's going to be like get on you, get on your clothes. Like the chicken shit got on my clothes in Georgia, right? I had this particular chicken shit smell that kind of had me as a North Georgian, unbeknownst to me, right? But somewhere, I guess, in what culture, where it's predominantly white people for whatever reason, we smell like wet dogs. And I guess when you're in it, you wouldn't know it, right? You wouldn't know it. Funny thing, but that's what this guy said. It smells like colors. I just thought that was the most fucked up thing. It's just, and I bring that up for no reason other than to explain, well, you know, you could probably extrapolate a lot out of that. But it's just a story that stands out to me when I recall those times, right? Being in that truck driver school. And, you know, moving on from there. And this is not even to say, like, the dude was racist or anything like that. That was just how, like, his family, his town, they just talked about one another. You know, it's just another word for African-American. But what really bothered me was the idea of the smell thing. Like, how could the color of a person's skin actually create a smell different from another color of skin? It's just too fucked up. But yeah, I can see where culture, you know, Italian would make you smell like provolone and garlic at times, simply because that's the culture. That's how you, what you cook with, that's what you eat, that's where you hang out. That could happen, you know. The really good example would be like East Indians with the food that they eat. What the hell is that? The curry, right? Curry and everything. Curry, like garlic, is something that kind of comes back out in your pores. So Indians will have a certain smell. So I guess maybe there's something. Maybe it's something in the food, you know, the food. But it's really the culture that decides the food that you eat. So there's something that I eat as a person with white skin that makes me smell like a wet dog. You know what's fucked up? Ever since I heard that comedian say that, like, I go take a shower, I'm in the shower, I soap up, and I don't use perfume soaps. Like, I use the Ivory, like 99.96% pure, whatever, as the commercials used to say. I use the Ivory soap that's just, like, unscented, smells like nothing. And I turn off the water, and I start the towel off, and my towel immediately smells like a wet dog. Like, I just throw my hands up, and I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what the fuck I'd do to make me smell like I smell. And I apologize for people that have to be close enough to me that don't like the smell of a wet dog. But yeah, Georgia Truck Driving Academy. I don't even know if the place exists anymore. When I was putting my studio together, I was like opening up all my old boxes of stuff that I had nowhere to put anything. And I actually still have my little diploma from there. It's funny. It managed to make all my travels with me. It's useless, but here it is. I still got it. Right? Still got it. So, you know, moving on. Like, I would go back home to on my commute. You know, I was staying, like I said, with relatives, and then I would camp out with my girlfriend there at the time. When I would get into that area, there was always, like, you know, I'm going down, like, this country road. There was this one home on the way. It was an old, dilapidated trailer, right? Trailer, a mobile home. I guess that the siding peeled off of it through time. You know, windstorms, just whatever, you know. And, like, the whole front of it was patched up. Like, the siding that the guy who lived in it used was flattened out Budweiser 12-pack cardboard. The whole front of this guy's trailer just was Budweiser, 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 Budweiser. You get those 12-pack boxes with that thin cardboard. He just, like, flattened them all out, just tacked them on the front of his house, right? It's got nothing to do with trucking, except I'm coming back from that school, right? This is my commute. He had the commute going out, and then you got the commute coming in. And then there was this guy. That's how he lived out there. And it's some of the sights that you would see when you really get out in the country, in the South, in Appalachia. Really more Appalachia than just the South in general. You know, you just had people that lived unto themselves, and just it didn't really fucking matter to anybody else. You know, civilization kind of breeds civilization, and when you get a lack of civilization, just whatever, it doesn't really matter. And obviously, to that guy, I don't know. Maybe it did matter. That could have been a fashion statement of the sorts, right? That could have been his sense of art and whatnot, architecture. I don't know. And then, you know, inside the window, of course, you've got the Confederate flag that you could see on display. And I mean, this kind of imagery is real. Not very common, but I remember that particular instance of it. You know, if I drove past 1,000 houses, you had that one that stood out like that. You know, you had this just drunken dude with some kind of Southern pride. And I don't know why I say that. I'm expressing how things were in Georgia in Arlen times. You know, this would be 2007, right? It's irrelevant. I probably shouldn't have even brought that up, but yeah, there's a part of me, like I said, I was a damn Yankee. I was going through culture shock, and there was just some odd things that really jumped out at me while I was in that 2-year window of what seemed to me at the time hell in Georgia, which actually turned out that when I got back up north after that, up to Jersey, I needed to be back down south immediately. I didn't belong in New Jersey anymore. Something changed in me. You know, something changed right there. And I say that all the time. You know, you've heard me say that before. You'll hear me say it again. But, I mean, you know, maybe, you know, let's just go with this guy. You got this fucking weird dude in this weird trailer with this total obvious lack of sense of community. Or at least a twisted one. And, you know, I was doing all this, I mentioned all this, like, kind of research that I was doing into getting into the field of driving a truck over the road, right? Truck driving. And I was doing this all, like, through the internet, right? I had my air card and my laptop. I'm on my, searching on the internet all the time about anything involving driving a truck. And I get on these forums, right? And people make commentary on whatever subject matter is. You know what a forum is, you know, internet forum is. And it's just invariably there'd be like these people, you know, you'd have like rookies. Like I wasn't even a rookie. I was like pre-rookie, you know, I was just an inquirer is what the church would call me, you know, at that stage, right? I was an inquirer into the possibility of entering into the field of transportation as an over-the-road trucker, okay? And as such, I duly have questions. And I go in there and I see where other people have had the same questions and I read the responses. You know, you just want to know, like, oh, how much does it cost to get a CDL in this state? You know, what are the rules for, like, carrying a firearm? Whatever, you know, whatever is your concern about driving a truck, you ask a question. To you, you have no idea. You're new to it. To somebody who's been doing it for 15, 20 years, you have the answers. Now, some of the people with the answers turn out to be these real scumbags, right? They can't just say what the answer is. They can't just say, well, in the state of North Carolina, you know, your CDL test fee is going to be like $35 or whatever, you know? They can't just say that. No, they got to say something like, you damn rookie, you don't even know what it costs to get your license, and you're going to drive a truck on my road. You know, that kind of attitude. The guy wants to just make sure everybody knows he ain't a rookie. And he picks on rookies, you know. So from reading all those kind of responses on forums, I just started, like, getting this imagery in my head of, like, the scumbag trucker, right? The scumbag trucker. The imaginary mean old trucker dude. You know, he's the guy who's sitting in the truck stop. He's got that CB radio on, and he's just watching you back up. He could tell you're a rookie, and he's on the CB. He's going, hey, buddy, check out this rookie. The one over there in the red Volvo truck, right? Check him out. You're going to try to back into the spot. He ain't going to be able to do it. Watch him, watch him, watch him. Come on, rookie. You can't do this. You can't do it. You're just a damn rookie, you know? And you're like, this is what I see, you know. This is what I see. And this kind of thing, like, loomed over me, right, as I was in the process of learning. You go to the Georgia Driving Academy, right, and the instructors are telling you that this is what's going on. You got guys watching you, you know, they're watching you. They're making fun of you. You can count on it wherever you go. And it puts this, like, little fear into you. It's a weird thing, but the face on that fear for me, all I see, right? Imagine for yourself. This guy was doing like I just said, right? He's got that CB radio, the microphone piece, the transmitter part, like right in front of his mouth. And all you see is the mouth, like the tip of his nose, the mouth, his jaw. That's all, like, I could see in my mind. That's what this scumbag truck driver dude looks like, right? All I see is his lips moving, talking the way he talks, saying what he says. And he's got this, just this little fucking wispy, scroungy beard on his face. You know, missing spots, kind of patchy, really thin. But he's trying to grow it out because he wants a beard and a mustache. And a mustache, it's one of the mustaches that just, the hairs, the whiskers just stick straight out, right? I call them like rhino hairs or rhino whiskers. You know, you get them on your mustache. It's just like, on me, it's like that one wild one. Like, I can actually see it with, like, my eyes as I'm walking around. There's one hair just sticking straight out. You pat it down, it boings back out again. That's a rhino hair. I just grab it and I just rip it out of my face and it's gone, right? You get them in your eyebrows, too, especially as you get older. All you youngins out there look forward to that. You know, you don't pay attention to your eyebrows. All of a sudden, you got that one rhino eyebrow just sticking way the fuck out. It's like 3 inches long. How did that even happen? How'd you miss that? But you did. There it goes, right? So you get the rhino hairs. Well, this guy's got a whole mustache of rhino hair. All of them just sticking straight the fuck out. And he's got these thin little lips with this sinister little fucking puss on it. And he just hitting there talking into that CB radio, making fun of you because you're just a damn rookie. Just a damn rookie. Right? So I got this imagery in my head of this mean old scumbag truck driver sitting in a parking lot at a truck stop, right? And don't you know, right, with that imagery, because this is going somewhere. It all does, and it usually ties back together. I found that guy. I met him one day. I mean, I didn't talk to him. I just happened to be a curious onlooker. You know, when you're a truck driver, you do what? You go to truck stops, right? You got these places, and I don't know, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, it'll be the same. The way it is now and the way it was then is you get these places called truck stops. They're ginormous gas stations, right? Gas stations, and then they have convenience shopping built into them. And some of them could be, I went to a great one somewhere out in western Nevada. When I was working with a company out west, out of Montana, and I can't remember the town. You know, it might have been Winnemucca, like the Johnny Cash song. I've been everywhere, boy. But I'm thinking it was probably a little bit to the west of there, and possibly a little south of even that. And I'm not positive. It was not like your ordinary like. Flying J or Pilot or TA. I think it was more like a locally run thing, you know, private ownership. But again, we're going back 15 years or more, or 14, 15 years. And I wish I knew, but of all the truck stops I stopped at, that one was cool. What I mean to say is your basic truck stop is like a ginormous gas station. And then it has like a mart inside. You could do convenience shopping, like what you would get at a 7-Eleven supermarket, for example. Except it's on a larger scale, and it's geared towards truck drivers. And also interstate travelers, you know, like your family vacation with Chevy Chase, you're driving out in your station wagon to where, you know, wherever you're going on vacation. You stop there, and they've got amenities for you all. And the amenities will include, you know, for a truck driver, like showers, for example. They'll actually have like a hall that with bathrooms that have shower stalls in them. You pay a little extra money to go take a shower, because you can't take a shower in the truck, right? Over-the-road truckers are basically living in the truck. So you need somewhere to go, shower up, clean up, and then you need to purchase items relative to the truck, things that you wouldn't get at an ordinary gas station or there at the truck stop. You know, one example comes to mind, like I got in my pickup now, I carry to this day, it's called a tire checker, right? It's a little club that you go and check your trailer tires with. And you can't tell if they're running flat or not a lot of times. You go whack them, you can see if it gives a little bit, you know it's going flat on you. Why is that? Because they're you got two of them side by side, right? One tire has got air in it, the other one don't. The one that don't ought to look flat because it's got no air, but because the one next to it is still propping everything up and keeping it off the ground, you can't see the flat spot. So you got to check the tires. So you get these little clubs, like a little baseball bat, right? Or like a little lead pipe or something like that in some cases. I always go in for the baseball bat one. And I'm going to say they're about this, well, how long would that be? Maybe 18, 20 inch. Maybe 2 foot, thick handle, solid fucking wood. It's a great weapon. It's a great blunt weapon, and that's exactly why I have it. I don't have it for my pickup truck. I have it for knocking somebody on the head who gets a little too close, you know? Doesn't deserve a gunshot or a knife wound, just clobber them. Whatever, just something quick at hand. But the tire checker is something that you would get at a truck stop that you would not get anywhere else, you know, because it's geared for trucks. And of course, we're talking about the CB radio. They'll have all kinds of CB radios and accessories for CB radios, the antennas, all that shit. You know, they'll have replacement like reflectors of varying sorts, things for the trailer, things for the truck. You know, maybe like the replacements from just truck parts in general, right? They'll have some kind of selection of truck parts. And, you know, a lot of sunglasses, you know, because when you're driving, you're high up like that with the big window, you get a lot of sun in your face all day. Glasses really matter, so they always sunglasses, but you get them anywhere. But they usually have like a really big selection in a truck stop. Truck stops will usually have some kind of food to buy. They'll usually have refrigerators for drinks and shit like that, just like any other convenience store built into a gas station would have. And then some of them get a little elaborate, you know. Some of them have like a full-on restaurant built into it. And this is what I'm talking about. The one in Nevada, the one that I like the most, they had like a fucking casino built in. They had a motel built in. You know, they had like a, you know, a sit down restaurant where they had like the general supply area, what I'm calling the convenience store. They had all kinds of shit, you know. It wasn't just like this, you know, one row of specialty stuff for truckers. They had like an entire store that was all trucker stuff, all kind. Really cool place, I thought. And I wish I could remember what city it was in or outside of. And that's the thing about truck stops. Truck stops are usually perched like on the outskirts of a metropolitan area, or just down the freeway, randomly off to the side at some exit, right? Not usually in the city, but sometimes you have cities that built up around truck stops. I remember in Atlanta, there was one that was kind of sort of like that. Not really like downtown, but still in Atlanta somewhere. They built up like a whole business industrial area like right around there, and the truck stop was kind of just plunked in the middle of it. It was really a good place, you know, because you had so many loading docks right there in the area, you know, for deliveries. And I don't know, maybe it wasn't built, maybe they put it there on purpose, I don't know. It just looked like shit grew up around it. But anyway, usually it's not going to be in a city. It's going to be on the outskirts of a city somewhere, or just on the freeway, out in the country, down some interstate. But I met this mean old trucker dude, is what I'm trying to say. Now, you're in a truck stop, and it's what it's like. Now, some of them have, like, the full-on sit-down restaurants, like I was saying, and some of those full-on sit-down restaurants will have, like, a buffet. Make it really easy, right? You just go get what you want, you know. You don't have to sit and order off a menu and all that shit. They just give you a plate and you get a buffet. Well, it's a buffet. It's just like a whole selection of a whole lot of different food. You pick and choose what it is you like, you know? And it's all you can eat. You come back for more. And the truckers like that because truckers got nothing better to do than eat. Now, maybe I'll get into that, you know, just the condition of that you get into as a trucker. It's not an easy life. I'm going to disparage the scumbags, but I don't mean to disparage truckers in general. Actually, most of them are the salt of the earth. So understand that before I even get into this story. But now I'm talking about that one scumbag that is the image of the nightmares that were painted in my head through internet forums and then the instructors at the driving school. You know, I had the image of this guy who all I can only see was his mouth with that rhino mustache that kind of just, every time the guy took a breath, it kind of wiggled a little bit. it's kind of vivid detail. I mean, that shit just kind of played in my head. I don't get it. But I'm at this one truck stop somewhere, and God knows where, because you're just everywhere, right? Just somewhere I was. And it happened to be one of these places that had like the whole sit-down restaurant with the buffet. And I guess a guy was coming in or going out. I think he was coming in. I think he was waiting to be seated or something like that. I was standing out in the area, just nearby. I wasn't even going in, I don't believe. Maybe I was. I don't really remember those details, but I remember the guy. And the guy, he was big and fat and out of shape, and he had that face, and he had that scroungy beard, and he had that fucking rhino hair mustache. He had them thin little lips. And just greasy, little mean, you know, just a mean look in his eyes. And he's standing there, and he's talking about the buffet, right? He's talking about the buffet. And he's trying to say the word buffet, right? He's got that same voice I was telling you about. Damn rookie drivers. You damn rookie drivers just don't know what the hell you're doing. And you don't even belong on these roads, right? Damn rookie driver. Now he's talking like that about this buffet, but this guy is like so fat and so winded from like walking, I guess walking from his truck from outside through the truck stop interior, yeah, to this buffet. And he's just short of breath. He's trying to say the word buffet, and he just kept on saying buh, buh, buh. And he's just like B-U-F-F. He couldn't do the E-T at the end of the word. It was one syllable word for him.
They're talking about that there buff. Yeah, I want me some of that buff. That buff. Them fucking whiskers just kind of fluttering around, sticking straight out like they did. But there he was, you know. I imagined him and he appeared. The mean old trucker dude at the truck stop buffet. And now he's like evolved to like be like the face of my own personal. And you're going to hear this as we go along, right? I've got all these like kind of inner people inside of me, right? I've got my inner nerd. And I've got my inner this and inner that. Right? I don't need to go down the whole list of them. They're just coming. Oh, my inner Dwayne Schneider. Because right? I mentioned him earlier before. I didn't get into it, but I mentioned it, right? My inner Dwayne Schneider, my inner nerd. Well, I've also got my inner loser, right? Very well established throughout my whole life because, you know, some girl told me in the 6th grade or 7th grade that I was a fucking loser. Okay. So that little loser portion of me has evolved now, and I equate that with this scumbag truck driver, right? Somewhere deep inside of me is this really disgusting, mean-spirited scumbag of a person. That's fucked up to have to hear, I'm sure. It's not even all that fun to have to say. But we all got it. We all got it. Deep down, somewhere in us, there's that core of selfishness, of evil. And the face I slapped on that in me, it's this scumbag trucker dude at the buff. At the buffet, right? Give me some of that. So it's like the imagination I had along with this guy, right? The audible person portion of it was on the CB, like when you're trying to back a truck in. When I say back a truck in, when you're learning how to drive a truck, the hardest part is reverse. The angles you got to take, the adjustments you got to make. You got to develop a feel for it all. Until you do, it's a very rigid operation. Do this, do this, do that. You fuck up, pull forward, do it again. Oh, you hit something, you know? And it's the most stressful part. And it's really the part that people kind of gauge your ability on, right? How well can you just back up a trailer? And so I say, you know, my imagination with this guy, this scumbag trucker dude, he's the one who's sitting out there making fun of you on a CB radio. But the thing about the CB radio is it's actually worse than that. It's actually worse than that. I don't know if it's changed any, and I doubt it has, because it's a matter of really, it's culture, it's people. It's probably worse, not better. I never listened to the CB. I never engaged on it. Every once, if I got a traffic jam, I would turn it on to see if maybe somebody could tell me what the fuck is this is causing this and how long is it going to be, you know? And I would hardly ever get the information on that. It was noisy. Just a whole bunch of interference and you know, scratchiness, and that part of it sucked. But I mean, you could kind of cut through that when you're in search of pertinent information for your job, you know, for whatever it is you're at. But the people who actually spoke on it are invariably just disgusting scumbags, perverts of every fucking sort, and they would go into just gruesome detail about the things that they wanted to do to other people, you know, with their tongue, with their toe, whatever, you know, just fucking filth all the time. So I just never even used it. And, you know, I'm getting into radio a little bit now. I just got myself a shortwave radio. I'm starting into this new experience of learning and discovery, and in the process of deciding what I wanted to get started, I considered a CB, and it looked really good for a minute there, real practical. It's like you could speak into it. It's local stuff. Now, I'm not talking about from my pickup truck. I'm talking about like from my home studio here. You know, have some kind of radio thing that I could communicate locally with,
And then something just smacked me upside the head. Don't you remember the fucking scumbags who were on CB radio? I'm like, oh yeah, so I didn't go that way. I went short way instead, you know? And we'll just take it from there as we go. I don't even know where to go with that. It's just, the CB radio thing was really just a terrible experience to me. It really accentuated that notion I had about scumbags out on the road. You know what? There are. And again, I say, not everybody is. Most people are not. But that element is out there. And they're the ones that that actually make themselves known. You know? They're the ones that actually make themselves known. Oh, what a horrible thing. But once upon a time, you know, trucking had a heyday. And again, this goes all the way back to the 70s again, too. 70s were just a different time than to what we got now. You go back 40, 50 years, and trucking was a big deal. You know, it was like a huge part of culture. And I don't mean the way it is now. Like, trucking is a huge part of culture and always will be, as long as there is truck and as long as there's economy and distribution that is done by truck, it'll always be huge and important. But nowadays, it's not really at the cultural level. It is an industry unto itself that just kind of happens behind the scenes. You know, your package of bacon ends up in the refrigerator magically somehow. You got it from a store who got it from somebody somewhere, I don't know, doesn't really fucking matter. Well, the truck driver did that. It happens like that. That, you know, as long as there's truck driving, there's always going to be that significance. But there was once upon a time when it was culturally significant. I got to look up something here while I'm talking. I remember when I was a kid in the 70s, right? People were wearing these t-shirts all the time. Keep on trucking. It would be like this dude who's got his head leaned way back and his foot, like one big fucking left foot sticking forward, like he's walking in this kind of skanky way, you know? Skanking along. And keep on trucking. And I didn't really, you know, at that time as a kid, I didn't know what it was. And through my whole life, I never really knew what it was. I really thought it was just literally about trucking, because why trucking was such a common element of pop culture as it was back then. Movies and books and stories and songs and, you know, it was just really brought to the forefront of culture. I keep using that word, excuse me. I keep using that word. But Keep On Trucking, it was actually like a comic, a cartoon. And I'll read it to you, because that's what I just typed and looked up, so you know what I'm talking about. Keep On Trucking is a one-page cartoon by some guy named Robert Crumb, published in the first issue of Zap Comics in 1968. It was a visual burlesque of the lyrics of a Blind Boy Fuller song, Trucking My Blues Away, which I've never heard. Now I gotta go and see that or hear that. It consists of an assortment of men drawn in Crumb's distinctive style, strutting across various landscapes. The cartoon's images were imitated and much displayed during the hippie era. Okay, so it was a hippie thing that was actually brought along, which brings us back to the Grateful Dead. And trucking gets tied into it all, right? Because it says keep on trucking, but it was really a hippie thing. And going through the 70s, I regarded it as trucking because why? It says trucking, and trucking was so prevalent in pop culture back then. And when I say prevalent in pop culture, I hearken you back to, one great example. There's this song called Convoy by C.W. McCall, right? Now, speaking of the Grateful Dead, I just saw something on Facebook this morning that a friend of mine posted. And it was an interview with Jerry Garcia, guitar player, mastermind of the Grateful Dead, basically the leader of the band, dude. Jerry Garcia, talking about rap music, right? Rap music. And rap music, in his opinion, wasn't even music. Rap isn't singing, and then he went on and on. I'm thinking, obviously, that's stupid. I mean, it's bullshit, right? Rap is music. Maybe rap ain't singing, but
it's got rhythm and it's music. It's organized sound, you know? How could you dispute? How could you deny? I completely disagreed with it. Right? And there was a song, and I'm sure he'd call this music, back in the 70s, called Convoy by this guy, C.W. McCall. And I don't know his whole backstory or anything like that. But this was wildly popular. And it was a dude talking into a CB, basically. He was imitating a guy talking into a CB, a couple of guys, you know? I love it. I love it. You ask my wife. That song comes on, and I just get happy, and I just go right with it. There's just something about it. It's terrible. It's a fucking terrible song. But I love it, you know? Big band, this here's a rubber duck, and I ain't gonna pay no toll. So we smashed the gate, doing 98, say, let them truckers roll. See, even now, I just start doing the lyrics, I start trying to imitate, and I can't. The guy got a great voice, great speaking voice. I just start getting excited and happy about it. C.W. McCall, Convoy. They made a fucking movie to go with it, right? It was so popular. I don't know what came first, actually, the movie or the song. But there is a movie. The movie was starring Kris Kristofferson. Me and my wife have watched it twice in the past couple of years. Like, you know, just because of that. We like going back to this old stuff. But Convoy was a huge song. It qualifies as country music. But again, the guy is not singing. He's talking. Is that music? Well, they had background singers. These girls would get in. We had a great big con. And I can't hit that. I got to squeeze my nuts a little bit to hit that tone. And I just can't do it. Not in the mood for that today. But yeah, that background singer. So I guess that's a song, according to Jerry Garcia, right? Whatever. Like I said, success don't equal genius. Sometimes we just get lucky in this world. Moving on. Other elements of pop culture of the 70s built around the truck. There was this show, you know, the TV series, BJ and the Bear, right? BJ, was it BJ McCray? BJ McKay, and his best friend Bear, and I don't remember the show. I remember watching it, and I remember making fun of it. I remember, you know, like with my buddy with the Black Diamond. Again, we come back to this guy, right? He watched it. He had a cousin who was cousins with the guy who was the starring role, right? So he had some kind of like family blood tie to BJ McKay. But there was a truck driver that had a monkey. A chimpanzee was like his partner in the truck. And he would drive around all the country. And he'd find all kinds of like damsels in distress. And he'd pull off the road. And he'd get involved in this small town and solve the situation. You know, whatever. I don't really... I should probably go look and watch a couple of those just for the hell of it. I probably should have done it before I mentioned it here. But I'm just saying... Pop culture, it ran a TV show, and I think it even spun off, right? It wasn't like the whole Sheriff Lobo thing, a spinoff from BJ. It was popular. It was a popular show, BJ and the Bear. More popular than that, and probably a little earlier than that, Smokey and the Bandit. That was a huge thing, right? Huge. Burt Reynolds and really a star-studded cast across the board. Jerry Reed, the great country picker, the guitar player, the guitar man. He was a truck driver. Burt Reynolds was the bandit who drove around in a Trans Am with the T-tops. My cousin up in Canada had one, a red one, though. This guy's was black. That was huge. It was just one of the biggest movies of the 70s, you know? And it's still fun to watch. Jackie Gleason was the, Sheriff Buford T. Justice. Fucking hilarious. I mean, a little ridiculous, you know? But it was fucking funny. It was just old-time Southern humor built around trucking, right? The story goes, a song that Jerry Reed did, you know. Eastbound and Bound, right? Excellent country song. But that's the story behind Smokey and the Bandit. And the idea was in Texarkana, Texas, there was beer that needed to be delivered to Atlanta. And it had to be, you know, it was a lot of beer for this one big event. And they had just a very short window of time to get it in there. And they had to break the law to do it. Right? So the Trans Am was basically a lure and a scout. He would go speeding down the interstate to try to draw the cops after him. so the trucks behind can speed and get away with it, right? That was, and what a cool premise, really. The stupidity of it was that he pissed off this sheriff just across the border in Louisiana, who trailed him all the way to Atlanta, you know, through across county lines, across state lines. It wouldn't happen that way, but it was funny. It was Jackie Gleason, and it was fucking funny. Great. It was prevalent in a lot of ways, you know? Like, I talked about truck stops before. They're like these massive marts now, right? As I described, you have that interior. They're big, really blown-up gas stations. The truckers got their own side around back where they got all the diesel lanes set up and they got all the space for them to park and everything. It becomes something of a culture because people, you know, camp out overnight or over a weekend. I've been caught without a load, without a destination for weekends around the country here and there. And you end up at a truck stop somewhere and you're hanging out there waiting for dispatch to send you somewhere. So you go take your shower, you go buy some food, you hang around, you start meeting people. It could happen, you know. I kind of stay to myself, and I don't mind being alone, but it becomes something of the culture unto itself, you know, in that moment. So truck stop, is, you know, but it's like this big shopping center and more gas stations, all this stuff, like the super center, everything that you'd need while you're traveling over the road. And it's very corporatized, right? You've got these massive companies that just own all these truck stops. Like I mentioned, we got the Flying J's and the TAs and the Pilots and Loves and, you know, these big companies that just own truck stops all across the country. It wasn't like that so much back then. I think the TA's got to go back. But the truck stops used to be privately owned for the most part. And every one of them had its own like regional character to it. And I remember we would take trips every year. Like my family, I had relatives up in the Niagara Falls area of Canada. So we would drive from New Jersey to Canada, across Pennsylvania, upstate New York. And you know, going through the mountains, the Pocono region, Pennsylvania, up I-81, around Scranton and north of that, they had all these like hills and winding turns and beautiful countryside. And because all the hills and turns and everything, they would build these signs for like truck stops, gas stations, on these poles, on these towers that would be like 200 feet high. They put a little neon sign on top of it, you know, just so it could be seen. Some places you could barely see it at all, depending on your angle. In some places you'd have to look way the fuck up to see it, you know. But and they would just have like little truck stops off the side of the road somewhere. You'd go in there, it'd be more like a dingy diner and beer and shot bar than this whole full-fledged mart. You know, you would literally go in there to get a beer, a shot, and a burger, and you'd have like this worn-out old waitress. For whatever reason, her car broke down in that fucking town after her man left her, or she left her man, and she got a job there, and she's been stuck there ever since. And she was the whole character and charm of the place, and the place had very little character and very little charm. You know, I mean, I shouldn't say very little. It just had very dark and subdued, and I loved it. I loved that kind of place. You know, I remember, you know, one time at least we stopped in a place like that. Normally we would, you know, find something that was more amenable to the general population. It had like a McDonald's attached to it in New York State, and probably still to this day they had all these stops that, you know, they were sanctioned by the state government. And be a gas station, and it would be some kind of little shopping store for, you know, like a mini truck stop basically. And you know, usually like a McDonald's or a Burger King built in. And, you know, every 32 miles along the thruway they would have one. And every time you'd see those lights coming, oh, can we stop here, can we stop here, you know, me and my brother wanted to hit every McDonald's on the fucking way. I don't get it, but that's how we were. I loved traveling even back then. And those were the stops I'd want to make. But
what I really liked was, you know, that time we stopped in the weird place like that, you know. It got music playing in the background, and I still regard it as like truck stop music. You just hear like old Johnny Cash and just all that old country. That's what they played in places like that. It was a whole different feel. There were certain, you know, other times along the way. I remember one, you know, that girlfriend that I was talking about in Georgia. We drove up for Christmas to New Jersey up 81, but we, you know, like we were in, I don't know, Virginia or somewhere down there. And we pulled off the road somewhere, and there was one of those odd privately owned truck stops, which was obvious. It was like a fucking meth house. It was just obviously like a criminal element spent their time there. All the truckers there were owner-operators. Owner-operators, they own their own truck. They run their own business. They get their own loads. They get all the money, and they're responsible for the repairs and the maintenance of the truck. Whereas most drivers are company drivers. Companies take care of all the stuff, but they got to go where the company tell them to go. And the company don't want them to go off to a place like that. Companies want them to go to these big corporate pilots and flying J's. They got contracts with them, all this shit, right? Discounts through the contracts. So you don't get, as a company driver, unless it's an emergency for some reason, to go to these places, right? We were driving a pickup truck, so I just pulled off the side of the road. That's where we went. We went in there, and man, it was a scary kind of place. You had to kind of watch what the fuck was going on around you in there. So it was like a biker bar of truck stops, and I don't know what town or whatever, ever, but you know what? I like that shit better than just the sterile, you know, corporate America. I'll take my chances in a place like that. It's just more interesting to me. The CB radio in the 70s, they had their own lingo. It was like the own language that they spoke. It comes with all these codes that mean shit, and I never learned it. I never learned the lingo. I know as much of that as anybody else does, or most people, I should say. But the truckers, you know, it's like 100 or more codes. Everything represents something. I don't know what they are. And then they're just the lingo of the language off the code, just the things that they make reference to. You listen to songs like Convoy, like I mentioned, or Eastbound and Down. They're using words that represent things, you know, like a smoky is a cop. It's a particular kind of cop that wears that kind of Smokey the Bear style hat, right? A bear, Smokey the Bear. The reference to a bear as a cop for the same reason. You don't often see like state troopers that wear hats like that, but not your regular everyday cop. But state troopers are the ones that were hiring the truckers, right? More often than not. But they get the whole lingo. There's all kinds of representational words, a whole language unto themselves, basically. It's kind of interesting if you like lingo. I mean, language, lingo, it's an important element of cultural distinction. Everybody keeps on like harping, and I'm getting back to this again because of the whole smells color / smells like a wet dog thing from before. But more important than how somebody might smell as a cultural distinction is the way they speak. The words that they use to represent things. You know, I was working on another podcast that never did actually get released. And I was making reference to a Radiohead song, right? Now, Radiohead's an English band, just like The Who and Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and all those, you know, the three almosts I was talking about before. Radiohead, you know, come later on in life, 90s, and still going, I guess. I kind of dropped off with King of the Limbs CD. I didn't like it. I went to the concert. I was disappointed. And that was the end of Radiohead for me, but that's all beside the point. Radiohead, English band, English lyrics, English words, English references. And one of them that sticks out to me is Liffy, right? They have a song that involves being a ghost and like moving through walls and traveling up to the upper floors. And this guy's talking about floating up the Liffey. I don't know what a fucking Liffey is.
I'm an American in Texas. I come from New Jersey. I've been through the Appalachians. I've lived in Tennessee and Georgia. I've got a couple of different accents that mix into my speaking when I talk. And none of the lingo associated with any of those regions and the accents say anything about no Miffy. I looked it up. I bothered because I'm that kind of guy. I'm on a need-to-know basis, and I need to know everything. Liffey in England is a reference to a lift, which is a reference to what we call an elevator here in the United States, right? So Liffey is just kind of like this very familiar expression of elevator in England. Floats up a Liffey. Why do I say all that? It's just an example of different lingo, right? Different words being used in different cultures, even in the same language, right? So you are distinguished by the words you choose to use. And you fall into a culture on those lines. Way more than you smell. God, that is just so funny to me, all that shit. Anyway, you know what, I think I'll cut it there. This has been pretty long. I don't really know how long. And I'm going to try to keep these things a little short. But anyway, yeah, this is all about keep on trucking, man. Keep on trucking. I still have that spirit in me that wants to just get on the road and drive a truck, you know? It was not that great of an experience, really, overall. Great experiences in it. And this is what I meant to say that I didn't say before, and I have to say about it. But, you know, first of all, yes, there are scumbags out in the world that drive trucks. But more often, way more often, you've got the salt of the earth people. Now, a lot of people who drive trucks are retired people, right? An old couple. An old couple will retire, and they'll both get their CDL, commercial license, and they'll partner drive on the road. And they'll just make money and live together and be together. They get a little dog, a little chihuahua or something like that, you know. They sleep in the same bunk, their husband and wife. And that's how they go. You know, people come out of the military. You got a lot of veterans that are out on the road driving. There's some really good people. Again, it's hard work. Sitting around on your ass driving ain't so hard. But when you're doing it all the time, you know, it's a challenge on your mind. And what I got to say that nobody would know unless you did it, it's very, very stressful. These people are driving vehicles that are in the area, give or take, depending on dependencies, that is 70 foot long, right? That will weigh upwards of 80,000 pounds, or no, 40,000 pounds, right? Depending on the cargo. You can't just stop, right? You drive around in your little Toyota or something like that. You zip in and out of traffic. You zip in and out of your parking spots. A truck, you can't just park anywhere. A truck doesn't just U-turn on the road anywhere. A truck doesn't just weave its way in and out of traffic. And it does not stop when you hit the brakes. It takes a while for that truck with all that weight and all that length to come to a controlled stop. What do I mean by that? An uncontrolled stop means that you're stopping too hard, too fast, with too much weight, and the trailer starts to come right around you. People die, right? People die very quick. And we're idiots on the road. We don't know what it's like to drive a truck, so we imagine it's, you know, because we're egocentric as we are, we imagine it's no different than us driving, you know, it's all the same. You know, the traffic light turns red up ahead, and the truck is already starting to slow down a mile before it happens to make sure he stops on time. And then all these people just start pouring in front of him because nobody wants to be stuck behind the truck. And this guy's just losing more and more real estate to even be able to come to a stop. You're putting yourself right there to be run over by his fucking truck. You're dead. You're dead. It's very stressful. If you're conscientious, you care about people, you don't want to kill nobody, it's very stressful. There's a lot of things that you gotta be aware of and keep control of that you don't have to do in a car. Driving a car is mindless activity. It's driving a truck is not. You've always got to be attentive to things, all kinds of things. So it's very stressful. And it's very dirty. You end up in the ass end of everything, right? You're pulling up to everybody's loading dock, right? They put the nice brick face and bushes, hedgerow out front. They carpet the lobby. No, you drive around back. That's where the dumpsters are. The truck drivers, the scumbag truck drivers, they get out. Nobody's looking. They'll just take a piss right down there under the loading dock. You jump out, there's a piss puddle. Not that that happens all the time, but you're in that dirty fucking place. Nobody cleans back there. Wind just blows the garbage in. The trash floating all around. And, you got to get out and unload, or at least get the paperwork while people are unloading the truck. You may break your ass if your job is one where you actually have to physically unload the stuff. You may work really hard, but even if you're not, it's a tough job. And the lifestyle itself is the toughest part of it. Again, you don't get to exercise as freely as you want. Your eating options, you have to really go out of your way to get decent food to eat. You stop at a Walmart where there's a big parking lot where you can actually fit in and pull in and turn around and maneuver a little bit. You could go in there and you could stock up on some better eating stuff. But I know from experience that you just fall away from that really quick. It's a lot easier just running a truck stop and get a bucket of chicken or burgers or whatever, And it's not the most pleasurable life. So you start looking for little things like that to find pleasure in. And you get unhealthy really quick. Now, I was a smoker when I was doing it, and I smoked a lot. But I smoked even more, almost twice as much while I was driving a truck, right? So my health went to hell, and that was what was the end of it for me. So, respect. Give some respect. Understand that the trucks, that's a hard life. It's a hard life. It's a very important life. And tip your cap to them. And if you're a Christian and you're a praying person, you see a truck, just throw a little prayer up for the trucker, Difficult as it is, it has its moments. You get these romantic notions of driving off into the sunset and seeing the country and everything. And you do. You get that. You come around the bend and you're on this freeway and the road is open in front of you and the sun is starting to set. You're looking at the desert, or you're looking at the plains, or you're looking at the mountains. And that happens. Problem is, you don't get to pull off the side of the road and put your feet and hands down in it. You're just driving through. So you don't get the full experience of it all. Usually. No time to stop. So anyway, keep on trucking, right? Keep on trucking.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Arlen Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Arlen Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at postarlen.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@postarlen.com.